Hello, everyone, and welcome to Chicken Talk Online Radio, brought to you in part by Blog Talk Radio. Today is Friday, December 9th, 2022. I'm your host, Robert Flecker, and we are going live now. Everyone, listen, I'm running a little bit behind today. I worked all night on the website, chickensforsale.us. You'll have to excuse me a little bit for being late. We are going to have a good show, and we're going to go ahead and start off by opening the air for callers to call in. You might have something for sale, or you might just want to promote your homestead or farm. The call-in number is 563-999-3679. And back to our show. Well, folks, today we're going to talk about growing food crops on your homestead right alongside your produce garden, how you might be able to get by doing that, and how effective it can be. Well, I guess to start with, and I'm going to need to pull this literature up here to see in a manner that you'll be able to fully understand, but there's an old root crop, and I learned about it years back, but there's an old root crop that you can grow pretty much in the ground, like you would a potato or a radish or a beet or a turnip, or, you know, it's a root crop. The difference about this particular root crop is that, well, it's a fairly large root crop. It gets pretty big, more so than a sweet potato. It's commonly known as the mangle. It's a very big beet. The mangle is a field beet, mangold, mangel wurzel, more commonly known by farmers as a fodder beet. Root of scarcity, excuse me. So these are some common terms for it. Anyway, so the mangle is a very large beet. It doesn't take a large area to grow a big crop of mangles. The seed is easily found in bulk, or you can grow your own seed if you're a dedicated homesteader. So you grow your mangles, and they'll last a long time. You can feed it as a 50% food source to everything you've got on your place that is a herbivore. I think that they're not omnivore. They'll eat mangles. If they're herbivore, they'll eat mangles. But for animals that can't chew the mangles, directly as they are in the large form of the root crop, you can have them shredded in a shredder, kind of like if you have to shell corn. Well, you can shred a mangle just like you would shell corn. You wouldn't use a corn sheller, but so you can process these mangles into suitable food regimens for your animals and feed them outright. Mangles are a very high source of food, and they're inexpensive to grow, and when things are bad out there and you can't seem to afford food, mangles will get you by. And so it's M-A-N-G-E-L, mangles. It's you can look up a oversized beet for food source for livestock food or whatever you might do. Rabbits absolutely love a mangle. They're right up there with comfrey when it comes to rabbits. It doesn't take a big crop, big parcel to grow a big crop of mangles. So just an idea of something you might want to think about trying to incorporate into your produce garden this spring. Try out with your animals. Shred them up, feed them to the chickens. Chickens will eat them. Rabbits, they love them. That's kind of what brought me to it. I figured, we were talking about that Poultry Inspection Act, and you've got two alternatives besides your produce next year for your market if you're strictly homesteading. That's rabbits and domestic chickens, domestic poultry. So, if you're going to be raising rabbits, you might want to have an extra food source besides the pellets, because with the way the economy is going, the pellets are going to get kind of high, just like it is for the chickens or anything else So the mangles is a multi-purpose food source that you can work out, and it'll help you on your homestead. But otherwise, I want to talk to you a little bit more about why we're in the gardening state of mind, composting, and what you do about, you know, your garden scraps, you know, your waste from your animals, and how you make this all work together in an effort to sustain your homestead. Now, there's one thing here that bothers a lot of people, and I'm going to tell you what, you know, most farmers do, but, you know, it can be worked into your compost as well. But, you know, a lot of times there's on a farm, you know, just not a very big farm, but on a farm, farmers will have 15 to 20 hogs on their lot. And, you know, if you've got 500 chickens and you're selling eggs to markets, and, you know, you've got dead chickens every day, or, you know, if you have 100 rabbits and you lose a litter of rabbits, you know, every other evening and maybe in the morning too. Anyway, these carcasses, you know, you can't just pile them up and get in the tractor out and digging holes every day in your field. You know, that's going to get quite tiresome, and it's going to tear up your terrain and cause erosion and all sorts of things. So anyway, people that have hogs or pigs that turn into hogs, they absolutely love fresh carcasses. You can throw them a chicken that had, you know, just fallen over dead. You can throw that thing right in there to those hogs, and before you know it, the most dominant hog nearest to that that carcass's location is going to devour that thing within about 3 seconds flat. So that's one way of composting your carcasses, your dead carcasses from your chickens or your other homestead animals that just happen to keel over during the day's time. That's not always an option on a homestead, however, because, you know, you've not always got the liberty to have swine on your property if you're homesteading. So you got to have a very effective composting system. A very effective composting system is going to be hot. You know, it's going to compost at a very high rate. You know, the level of decomposition of your compost pile will turn over at a very very high speed. So there's some things you're going to need. Mostly recommended by my experience is, you know, some type of equipment that you can use, such as a tractor with a bucket. You know, you might not quite be able to afford that, so you'll have with some other type of alternative. They do make walk behind skid loaders and things like that that you can use. But if you're going to be homesteading at any scale larger enough that you're going to be going to market with it, you want to have a really good compost system. So the things that you're going to be adding to your compost system, that's going to be animal waste, garden waste, carcasses, you know, processing from the carcasses. You're going to have guts and feathers and things like that. All this stuff you're going to want to compost. And so in order to do so, you're going to have to lay your compost, you know. You're going to have to schedule your chores of harvesting and everything around the compost system so that you can layer it properly, and that your heat and your decomposition from the composting is evenly distributed in working on a proper fashion. So, you know, one thing that you can do here with your compost system, you know, it's not really going to get much of a rest and get to handle the most, I guess, the dense items until winter. And by spring of the year, your compost will be ready to spread on your garden. And you do want to make sure whatever compost you make in a year's time, you use that full amount of compost on your garden. If your garden has to grow larger, if that means you have to plant rhubarb and asparagus that you wasn't accounting on, well, then that's your idea. You know, whatever compost you make during the year, you use the following spring on your garden. And so But that's just something I wanted to talk to you about. You know, you got to be prepared for your upcoming season, and if you're just getting into homesteading and you're going to be looking down the avenue of raising animals, you're going to have animal waste, and you're going to need an effective way of dealing with that. Some people use hogs. If you're on a farm, you know, that's permissible. I think the rule here in the state of Virginia is 5 acres makes a farm, and most 5-acre parcels that are zoned agricultural, you can have swine. But if you're on a homestead and you're homesteading off of an acre, you're just going to need a good old-fashioned hot compost pile, and you're going to have to know how to work it. Lord help you if you have to manage that thing with a pitchfork, and you're out there every day just turning that thing, or you're trying to use one of these highfalutin Washington, D.C.-based rotating barrels that turn your compost on a stand in a barrel every day, because you're going to have about 100 of them lined up along your fence line, and you're probably going to have to hire some migrant workers to come up there and turn them about every 30 minutes all day, 5 days a week. But so we've got the composting idea started, and we can discuss that more at a later time. If you'd like to call in and talk more about that, you're more than welcome to. Some other things that I wanted to discuss is, with spring coming on, we talked about you're going to need to start these rabbits off as far as production in around March of the year. So, you know, buck selection and does, you know, that should be something that you've already started looking into to find breeders in your area. You're going to try to find rabbits for a good while before you find somebody that's got adequate stock that will suit your needs. I wouldn't suggest growing pet rabbits on a homestead. You know, if you're a backyard breeder and you're wanting to get into the pet business, go ahead and get you some pet rabbits. If you're a homesteader, find yourself a meat-worthy breed that you're comfortable with, that you feel will add value to your homestead, and something that you want to put your work and effort into. I'll tell you my first experience on a rabbit farm. I had never been to a commercial rabbitry, and I did not know what to look for. And I very well told the owner of that rabbitry that was the case before I got there. And what she told me is, I'll pick out 6 rabbits from my stock that's ready to sell, and they're at breeding age or close enough to it, and I'll let you pick from those 6 as to whether which ones you'll have for your breeding operation. I thought, well, Lord, okay, we'll go with that, and I'll see what happens once we get started and I get there and we figure it all out. So as it would turn out, when I got there, I just couldn't really understand what it was I was supposed to look for one way or another, and I was kind of scared to buy just any of them. So the lady, and this is what you want to know, when you're working with somebody and you're buying these rabbits, you want somebody that, if you're not sure what to look for and you're not sure what to buy, they're not going to tell you what to buy, because they're not going to want to take that liability, I guess is the short way of putting it. But they'll tell you what to look for, and they'll help you understand, this is what you need to look for. Now, based on that, whichever rabbits you choose, that's your choice, they're going to be your rabbits. But you want somebody that's going to actually walk you through that process if you're not sure. And you want to try to go ahead and get your buck and 2 does, or, you know, however many rabbits you want. A buck will handle 3 does, or maybe as many as 4 does in a rotational breeding outfit. So that's something else you want to look for. We've talked about caging requirements, watering, and things like that. So go ahead and start looking for your rabbit stock and worrying about getting those rabbits started. You can sell meat production rabbits for Easter bunnies to the farm supply stores, and you'll have a good time with it. Folks, we've took about all the time we can for today. I want you to make sure you keep those waters unfrozen, keep those animals all fed, happy and warm. And you guys have a nice day. Take care. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.